It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. 5 years ago, Pennsylvania's open records law was changed with the promise of ensuring more information would be made more easily available to the public. As 90.5 WESA's Deanna Garcia reports, records requests have gone up, and the new law is seen overall as a positive for the Commonwealth. But open records officials and some people who use the law see room for improvement.
Before the change in the open records law, all records were presumed closed unless the requester could prove why they should be open. Now, with the new law, all records are presumed open unless the requestee can prove otherwise. This has resulted in a spike in requests from across the Commonwealth, according to Pennsylvania Office of Open Records head Terry Mutchler.
The new Right to Know law that went into effect January 1st, 2009, really pried open many of the state's filing cabinets, and citizens were able to obtain hundreds of thousands of records that were off limits under the old law.
Those records can include contracts, budgets, payrolls, and it applies to state and local governments and government agencies. Mutchler says requests are made most for financial information.
They want to know, you know, as they sit down at their kitchen tables around the Commonwealth and to take a look at where their money's being spent. I think we also see that in terms of them wanting to know how their government officials are spending their money, how much is being spent on, you know, by a police department, by a school district, by the state itself, how much are employees being paid.
And Mutchler says the number of requests is spread throughout the Commonwealth.
The requests come from all quadrants of the state. There's not one particular area that, obviously you get a large amount from Pittsburgh, you get a large amount from Philadelphia because, they're cities, but we see a broad swath of records being asked for.
Of course, just because there's a presumption of openness doesn't mean such records are always easy to come by. Agencies can still deny requests, they just have to have reasons that are valid under the law. And under the law, those requesting the documents have some recourse.
When a citizen is denied access to a record by their government, they can come to us and the office an attorney reviews the scenario and makes a determination as to whether or not the record is public.
That works well in theory, but some people who use the open records law say there are some weaknesses. Jim Parsons is assistant news director at WTAE-TV and a former reporter. He says the Office of Open Records itself is an improvement, as it acts as a neutral arbiter.
The problem is they have no teeth.
When a request is denied and an appeal to that filed, the Open Records Office determines whether or not that record should, in fact, be made available. Parsons says if the office determines it is an open record, all the agency has to do to keep it under wraps is file an appeal with the Court of Common Pleas.
Then you're in court. And now, you know what? That agency has lawyers, and you as an individual, you don't have access to lawyers necessarily. So that part of the new law has not changed anything. In the old days, prior to the new Right to Know law, you ended up, if you really wanted to fight an agency over records, you ended up in court. And guess what? It's still the same today.
The Open Records Office has handled about 500 cases in the courts since 2008. Aside from outright denials, Parsons says there are still other ways to restrict access to records.
We've requested records here where we've gotten back nothing but black pages because they've redacted or blacked out information and have cited reasons for doing that, which they're required to do. You know, there are reasons under the law, some exceptions under the law, where they can black out information or redact information. They're also allowed to charge you a copy fee. And they're also allowed to charge you what's called a research fee.
Another challenge, says Parsons, is how records are perceived. Parsons says Pennsylvania is not at the top of the list when it comes to transparency. He says other states in which he's worked, including Florida and Indiana, were more open.
My experience in other states was that folks who worked in municipal level government, county level government, city level of government, considered themselves stewards of records, not owners of records. In Pennsylvania, and I might be, you know, vastly generalizing this, but in Pennsylvania, my experience has been in many, many more cases I've come across clerks who work at the local level who don't consider themselves stewards of documents, but rather they own the documents. And their job is to keep them secret and to hide them from the public.
Open Records Office's Mutchler says the state is moving in the right direction after years of the records being mostly off limits. She says there have been more than 50,000 inquiries and the office has handled more than 8,500 appeals. Some from the same people.
There are some frequent flyers out there. There are folks that, you know, continually use this law for the sole purpose of harassing public officials.
And Mutchler says some have used the law for commercial purposes.
We have folks that will come in and they'll file a right-to-know request to attempt to get, for example, any dog licenses that were issued so that they can start a marketing list for their new kennel that they're going to, you know, create.
Mutchler says state legislators are considering tightening restrictions on commercial uses and limiting the number of requests prison inmates can make. Currently, inmates account for about a third of records requests. But for some, obtaining records is part of their job. Such is the case with WTAE investigative reporter Paul Van Osdahl.
I would say I request records at least a couple times a week using the right to know law. And this is everything from local school districts to the governor's office, the attorney general's office, just runs the gamut. It just depends on what you're looking for.
Van Osdahl also says the law as it is now is an improvement, but agrees it needs some work. He says there's a laundry list of exceptions that allow several entities to keep their records sealed, most notably the exemption that applies to state-related universities such as Pitt and Penn State.
Even though hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars go to these organizations, there is only a very tiny amount of information that these organizations are required to release to the public. That is a loophole that the legislature certainly ought to consider closing, and I know there's been a lot of discussion about how that's going to happen.
Bills pending in the state legislature would amend the open records law and bring state-related agencies such as the universities under it. Parsons says there is hope the law will be improved this year.
But there are some amendments that, frankly, would make the law even worse, because there are lobbyists at work who are trying to make the right-to-know law, as bad as it already is, even more restrictive.
That includes a provision that could allow agencies to claim a records request is overly burdensome, skip over the Office of Open Records, and go directly to court. Open Records head Mutchler agrees changes are needed to make the law stronger.
I think that as we look to redo the right-to-know law, I think it needs to be tightened. Pennsylvania is now emerging as a leader in transparency in government, and we don't want to take any steps backwards.
The National Freedom of Information Coalition and the Better Government Association gives Pennsylvania an F when it comes to openness, though the state is not alone in that grade. 38 states also received failing grades. Only Nebraska and New Jersey scored above a C, coming in with B grades. But Mutchler says since 2008, Pennsylvania went from a rank of 49th from the NFIC to ranks as high as 25 in some surveys. I'm Deanna Garcia, 90.5 WESA News.
And we're joined now in Studio A by Deanna Garcia. Good day, Deanna.
Hello.
What would you say is the overall takeaway from this story? And it was a great story, by the way.
Oh, thank you. The main takeaway was that the law is better than it used to be, but it's still, depending on who you talk to, has room for a lot of improvement and even just a little bit of improvement. I mean, everyone from the head of the Open Records Office down to people who use it say, yes, there needs to be room for improvement. Now, Terry Mutchler, the head of the Open Records Office, had just glowing things to say about the law, of course, that it was a huge success, that kind of thing, whereas the journalists say, nah, there's still some room for improvement. It is easier to get records, but it still can be also really hard to get records if a place wants them to be kept under wraps.
And one of the things that Terry Mutchler cited is this sort of nuisance aspect to the law, where people will use it to obtain any kind of information that might benefit them, but that is not necessarily the most efficient use of the law. Are there any particular examples that you can think of that sort of speak to that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, she did talk about how most people use it for good, legitimate purposes. However, you're going to always have somebody who's abusing the system. There are people who, as she said, have a lot of time on their hands. Prison inmates have a lot of time on their hands and account for, as she said in the story, a third of the filing. And they are frequent filers, often filing appeals and many different requests. Some people use it to try to sort of harass local officials. And then there are people who just don't quite grasp exactly what the open records law is for. Mutchler cited a living man who tried to request his own autopsy report. she said it wasn't clear that maybe he didn't understand what an autopsy report was. They just, that was a bit unusual. In another,
I'd like to get my hand right on one of those too.
In another instance, a man had heard a story in another state about some sick monkeys in a zoo, or some monkeys who had a disease. So this person tried to obtain zoo records from Pennsylvania City on monkey health reports, was trying to obtain health reports for monkeys. Those are not open records. So
right. So you covered in the story the journalists' use of the law primarily. And what about the public? You've mentioned some extreme examples
right
there, but it can be useful to individual citizens.
It can. Mutchler cited a person who used the open records law to recoup costs when their car hit a pothole and was damaged. And they were able, through open records, she didn't, you know, outline specifically, but they were able to use that law to recoup costs for themselves. In another area of the state, she mentioned open records law was used to determine that in some school districts, some people who had been dismissed 3-4 months prior were still on the payroll, were still getting paid, even though they'd been dismissed from their jobs. And so opening up things like that, she cited a case in another part of the state where a little league coach was siphoning off money, and that was revealed through the open records law. So things like that that people have revealed have been helpful.
Which is a lot of what people often want to know. How much is an individual
being paid right,
and also transparency as far as where the money goes always is a good thing. So in the story, you mentioned some changes to the law that are pending in the state legislature. What are they?
Well, among them, I mentioned also in the story and just now that inmates are frequent filers for requests. So one of the bills pending, I believe it's a bill from Dominic Pileggi, would
And he's the guy who originally shepherded this through the legislature back in 2009.
Right. And that would tighten some of the that would clarify a lot of things. And it would also tighten and put limitations on how many times inmates can file that kind of thing. Other changes pending, there's House Bill 1476, which would permit local and state agencies to charge additional fees for records, for duplication fees, that kind of thing, if somebody is requesting them for commercial uses. Mutchler mentioned in the story that that was sort of an unintended consequence of this law, as people can obtain who's filed for dog licenses. Okay, I'm opening a kennel. Now I can use this for commercial purposes, that kind of thing. A big loophole is the state-owned university. So another bill pending would bring into compliance the state-related universities, such as Penn State, Pitt, Temple, and Lincoln. Pileggi's bill seems to be the largest. It clarifies a lot of aspects of the law, makes a number of technical changes, and like I said, clarification. But it does not include the state-related university aspect.
90.5 WESA's Deanna Garcia on the open records law in Pennsylvania 5 years later. Deanna, great thanks.
Thank you.
Coming up, we'll talk with State Senator Jay Costa, one of the bill's original sponsors, about some of the changes the legislature is considering with the open records law. And we'll get a journalist's perspective from the Post-Gazette's Rich Lord. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's to Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're devoting most of our show today to the fifth anniversary of Pennsylvania's open records law. State Senator Jay Costa of Forest Hills was one of the original Senate sponsors of the bill, and he joins us now by phone. Senator Costa, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, great. Thanks for having me on board today.
In our earlier discussion on this program today, we heard clerks in Pennsylvania characterized as servants who felt it was their job to keep records secret and hide them from the public. What was it like to go up against that kind of mentality 5 years ago and get the open records law passed in the first place?
Well, it was a difficult challenge initially, and I will say to you that in many places that was the mindset. As you know, though, that whole presumption has now been flipped, and now the presumption is that most, if not all, records, close to all records, are now presumed to be open unless agencies or organizations can demonstrate that they are exempt in some way. So it was a challenge. It was an easy thing to do, and that's why you see a number of provisions that relate to, for example, exemptions, to make certain that we crafted a bill that along the lines of making sure we don't go too far. Since that time, decisions by the Office of Open Records and other court decisions have sort of helped continue to shape the law, but there's certainly more challenges ahead of us as we go forward that have been discussed and will continue to be discussed, and in fact, legislation has been introduced both in the House and the Senate to try to address some of those, to address some of the things that we've learned over the last several years, and also in response to open records decisions as well as court decisions.
And apparently, the mentality still exists, even though the presumption now is that these records are open. There still is the feeling among some in these agencies that they don't want to give the records up without a fight. So are you satisfied, Senator, with Pennsylvania's status regarding transparency at this point?
Well, I think there's more that we can certainly do. I'm certainly disappointed to hear that there are still agencies out there that take that view. I'd like to know whether or not the view is one that is a view that they take as it relates to the nature of the record that they're trying not to disclose, as opposed to maybe the impact or the consequence or the hassle, so to speak, that it would be to generate some of these records. Because oftentimes I think that's part of the problem, is some of the issues that we deal with is that the nature of the request may not be specific enough or may take an inordinate amount of time to combine or create the record that someone may be looking for. So it'll be interesting to see along those lines. But my hope is that as time goes on, and I believe so, that folks will recognize that records are open first and foremost, unless there's an exemption that they can prove and show that they are exempt from disclosure. So, I'm the optimist that I think time will change along those lines, Paul, but I think that we still have a ways to go in that regard, though.
And let's look at the core of this issue. Explain, Senator Costa, why it is better to have the presumption that all records are open, as opposed to how it used to be when all records were presumed closed.
Well, I think when records were closed and then folks had to go to great lengths to try to witness or view or see or compile or even have a chance to review various records, it was very cumbersome and problematic for complainants to want to come forward or requesters to come forward and try to see records under the old system. Now we have it clearly defined, in my view, process that says all these records are open, and it's just a better way to begin the presumption, to presume that it's open unless it's excluded. And everybody knows what the case is going forward, and I think that it removes any type of ability for agencies or legislatures or administrations to take a position that it's not available and should not be available. It's the reverse in the presumption, I think, makes a lot of sense. It was the right thing to do. As I said earlier, it was difficult to do in the beginning, but it clearly is the right direction for this Commonwealth. I think that you assume everything's open unless it's exempted, and it's a clear, concise approach to this to reviewing records, in my view.
Now, there are those, especially journalists, who still have complaints. Key among them is that when a request is denied and the Office of Open Records determines that it is, in fact, an open record, a state agency can file an appeal. Then you have to go to court, which is how it would end up under the old law. Does an individual really have fair access to these records, or as much access as they should have, when they may not have the resources to hire a lawyer and go to court and go through all of that?
Well, I think when you get to a point in time where you do have requests that are denied, as I said earlier, there's got to be clearly laid out exemption that would be applicable. If, in fact, there's a dispute relative to whether something is truly exempt, you know, that's, those are the close calls, so to speak. And I think there is a process that allows for, as you indicated, an appeal process. Folks with deep pockets are certainly able to do that, and it's typically the news media. But you're right, folks who are not subject to, who don't have access to resources to run it through the legal process, in some respects would be at a disadvantage. But I would suggest to you that, that may be the case in any type of proceeding that makes its way through an appeal process. I do think that folks, you know, by flipping the presumption, I think you're giving folks the opportunity to receive records that duly and clearly are available to them. It becomes when it gets in the gray area where question, something may be may not necessarily be something that is available, becomes more problematic, and the law provides for a process by which to get to that end.
We're talking with State Senator Jay Costa of Forest Hills on Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer on 90.5 WESA. Senator Costa, as the legislature looks to redo the right to know law, what steps do you think need to be taken to give it more teeth? What do you think needs to be done?
Well, I think there's no question. I think maybe we need to continue to look at whether or not organizations and agencies are, in fact, abiding by the provisions of the law. I think some of the things that we need to do, quite frankly, are provide more individuals at the Open Records Office to allow them to do further scrutiny in a more timely fashion. Sometimes when these matters make their way to the Open Records Office, it may take a little while for them folks to get their arms around whether or not something is open or not and making the decision. So I think one of the things we can do is be more efficient in terms of the decision-making as relates to the process. That requires more resources for that particular agency. But also think that when you've got situations where you've gotten, you have seen clear abuse of decision-making at the, by the Open Records Officer or a particular agency or the like, that there needs to be provisions that, you know, that we really make a point that that is not appropriate, and we need to provide sort of a chilling effect on those folks who want to make those decisions to not provide a record that's not based, in fact, on the exemptions or the law.
What tweaks are being considered at this point? What sorts of legislation is on the burners right now?
Well, there are a number of bills that have been introduced both in the Senate and the House, as I mentioned. Some of the ones dealing with, for example, one of the most significant ones that's gotten a lot of attention relates to whether or not we should expand the right-to-know law to incorporate our state-related universities. Currently, our state system schools are, for the most part, nearly entirely subject to the right-to-know law. However, the state-related, Pitt, Penn State, Lincoln, and Temple, have enjoyed a partial exemption. And as a result, during the Penn State Sandusky ordeal, there was a lot of folks who were clamoring to see that the state-related were part of the right-to-know law fully. That conversation is taking place. Senator John Blake from Scranton has been at the forefront of that issue, making certain that there's the appropriate balance that's addressed there. At the end of the day, my guess is that we probably won't see the state-related in the right-to-know law fully. However, I would suggest to you that there will be considerable changes, a whole litany of changes in requirements that under the law they would be required to disclose that they're not able to disclose now. So I think you might see some changes there along those lines. You also have issues relative to, for example, one of the bills that I've got, a small amendment that relates to the date of birth as another exception under the personal identification exception, because I think that the utilization of date of birth information could be problematic for individuals trying to protect their you know, personal identity. Other bills that are out there deal with issues like, I know Senator Pileggi, who was the original author of the legislation, also has some issues with respect to the nature of inmate requests. Sometimes inmate requests become voluminous, and they just become, they just can't handle the number of requests that are made for many things that simply can't be, not be done in an efficient and timely manner in accordance with the law. So we're looking to make some changes along those lines. I think fees are something that we're going to take a look at, because I think as we're learning, agencies are telling us that it's difficult to assemble some of these things. The manpower and the hours and the dollars that are spent to address these request, even though they're specific enough to be a formal request, sometimes just take a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of money for the agency. And those are the type of things that I think you'll start to see some conversations. There's some issues relative to, for example, volunteer ambulance services and volunteer fire companies, clarifying exactly what their status is, whether or not they are agencies under the Act or not, because there have been some mixed rulings across the Commonwealth. Some counties have ruled that they are not. Some counties have ruled that they are. And that's an issue that I think you'll see. You'll try to bring some clarity along those lines. There have been discussions about, for example, coroner's reports, to what degree can coroner's reports or should they be subject to the open records law, things of that nature. You also have, there are some folks who are looking, Senator Dinneman, for example, is looking to see whether or not he could provide for an exemption for the home addresses of public school employees under the right to know, put them in the same categories we currently have with, I think, law enforcement and judges. So those are just a handful of the things that are going on. But nothing in there is looking to change and make changes to the major premise that these records are open and that they are continued to be presumed open. The movement is more likely to create greater openness relative to some of the exemptions as opposed to creating a whole lot more of exemptions that would be limiting in nature in terms of the information that one's trying to receive.
State Senator Jay Costa of Forest Hills talking about some of the possible revisions to the state's now five-year-old open records law. Senator Costa is one of the original sponsors of the bill. Senator Costa, thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Paul, anytime. Thank you, buddy.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So what about the perspective of journalists on Pennsylvania's open records law? I'm joined now by phone by Post-Gazette reporter Rich Lord. Rich, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for having me.
And we'd like to invite you to join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. You can email us at essspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at essspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Have you used the open records law? Were you able to get the information you were looking for? What sorts of roadblocks did you run into? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Rich Lord, you say there are big problems with our state's right to know law. What are they?
Well, I'm going to say, first of all, that when the new law took effect in the beginning of 2009, there was an opening up. There was a feeling in agencies that, hey, now the presumption is that I got to give it over, so I may as well give it over. That has gradually shifted over the last 5 years. Agencies have been looking, I think, or at least focusing less on that presumption of openness than on the 30 exemptions in the law. And agencies have appeared to view the law in recent years as a tool for coming up with reasons not to disclose rather than as a requirement to disclose or as an encouragement to disclose. So when you look at the law, you see all this wonderful talk about the presumption of openness, and then you hit the section, I believe it's section 708, that lists the literally 30 exceptions to the open record requirement. Some of them make a ton of sense. I mean, I don't really want a record that's the disclosure of which is going to cause loss of life. I don't want to know who the state police undercover narcotics cop is who is working to take down the big drug network. I don't want to know the security details at the nuclear power plant. But I do want to know what our elected officials and appointed officials are thinking when they make a decision. And one of the exceptions that is constantly thrown in our way in my business is the exception for, quote, internal pre-decisional deliberations, close quotes. In other words, we're entitled to any record that reflects a decision, but we're not entitled to any record that reflects the considerations that were made, the deliberations that were made in the advance of that decision. And another one that has a kind of yin and yang, we aren't entitled to records related to a criminal investigation. Now, I could argue that after a criminal investigation is long over, the records might legitimately be considered public. But the law also exempts from disclosure records of non-criminal investigations. It's not clear to me, as an advocate for the public's right to know and as a journalist, why a record of a non-criminal investigation, you know, conceivably redacted to remove references to sources or entirely innocent or uninvolved people, would not be a public record. One of the areas in which the law is really good is financial records, and I'm very frequently use the law to get a hold of payment records, contracts, bills, invoices, for instance, from vendors. That's often very revealing, and that's an area of strength in the law. However, what if I want to know whether a process by which a contract was awarded was fair? I'm entitled, as the law stands now, to the winning bid, but I'm not entitled to what's called the bid tabulation, which would be a sheet that would be put together by the agency showing who was cheapest and who was best and why they made the decision that they made. So I guess that's my core beef with the act as it stands now, although I have a couple more.
Right.
But it's that we don't get to know why.
Well, I want to get to some of these amendments, some of which might be of concern to journalists. But let's let folks in on exactly how the law works. You, as a journalist, I'm guessing, use it quite often. How does it work? How often do you use the open records law? And what is the success rate in terms of getting the information that you need, that you feel is part of the public's right to know?
Let me give you a few examples, Paul. I think the most frequent use I make of the law is to request information related to municipalities settling lawsuits. I believe I'm entitled to records reflecting a settlement of a lawsuit, reflecting any payments, reflecting settlement terms. I often use the law to pry those loose because I cover a lot of court matters. Last year, I made ample use of the law in regards to some stories about the Pittsburgh Housing Authority. I wanted to see how it was using outside contractors, to which it was paying in total millions of dollars a year. And I got a hold of, through the Right to Know law, the invoices. The Housing Authority did not fight me on that. They provided the invoices, and the invoices gave clear indications of how these vendors were being used, allowing me to tell readers in some detail how millions of dollars in public money were spent. 2 years ago, I made a lot of use of the law of the Right to Know Act, requesting information on the Pennsylvania Cyber Charter School. Its founder was under investigation, and I was able to tell the public a lot about how it did business and how he did business prior to his indictment the following year. So what I do is I put together, using a form that's provided by the Office of Open Records, a request specifically indicating what I want. I send it in. The agency has 5 business days to respond. Oftentimes, what the agency does is it invokes a section of the law that gives it another 30 days to compile the records. And I get that when I am sending a very detailed, broad request. It may take some time to compile the records. Agencies, though, appear to be taking the position that the resulting kind of 37-day period should be the norm.
How does that impede your job as a journalist? For example, if you're on a deadline and you can't get something in 5 days and you have to wait 37 days, is that a stalling tactic? Is that something that an agency might use to kill a journalist's story?
Yes, that's something that is readily used to kill journalist stories every week, if not every day in Pennsylvania. Because things do get stale. The news cycle isn't 37 days long these days. And again, when I send in a request for a large amount of communication or a big pile of contracts, I understand why it's going to take an extra 30 days. But in reality, under the law, I don't have a way to appeal the agency's decision that it needs to take another 30 days. If there's a contract sitting on top of somebody's desk, I shouldn't have to wait 37 days, but sometimes they will make you do that.
What happens when your request is just flat out denied? What recourse do you have? How do you fight an agency over open records?
I appeal, and in fact, I spent much of this morning appealing a de facto denial of a record, so it's something that's fresh on my mind. And I've got to say that under Terry Mutchler, the office has been very prompt and responsive, and I think fair in regards to how it handles appeals. I've won some, I've lost some, and there are areas in which the law is in flux that I've won some and lost some. But I can't really fault the office. Now, we've seen some court decisions that have inured to the benefit of the public's right to know, and we've seen some court decisions that have worked against us, but I can't fault the office itself.
We're talking with Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reporter Rich Lord about Pennsylvania's open records law, how it works for journalists. We'd like to hear how it works for you if you'd like to join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Now, there are changes being discussed. We talked about that earlier with Senator Jay Costa. Rich, I know you've been following this. What do you think of some of the possible changes that are being considered by the legislature?
I'm heartened to hear that they may take a look at the exceptions.
Talking about, in particular, those exemptions for Pitt and Penn State?
Well, my understanding from my colleague Bill Schachner, who often wrestles with that as he covers higher education, is that that bill is stalled and kind of in critical condition in committee right now. And as I think some of your listeners know, the state-related universities, which are Pitt, Penn State, Temple, and Lincoln University, only have to provide a very small amount of information to requesters right now, essentially what they would have to provide on disclosures to the IRS as nonprofits and the list of their and the payments to their 25 highest salaried employees. That's pretty much it. Representative Scott Conklin out of Center County is leading the charge, but you know, it's lost some momentum since the Sandusky scandal has come off of the front burner, I guess, with occasional exceptions.
How much did that make it difficult for an organization like the Post Gazette, for example, to investigate the whole Sandusky scandal?
You know, because I wasn't directly involved with Sandusky, I don't want to comment in too much detail on that. But I'm going to tell you one area we're having a lot of problem, and that's the privatization of government. The law says that if you farm out a governmental function to a private business, we have rights to the records. However, in reality, in fact, a court decision says that we have rights to records related to the provision of the core governmental function, as they put it, of that agency. But with everything from dormitories at state-run universities, state-owned universities, to prison and jail medical care being farmed out to private companies, it becomes tougher and tougher to understand how well they're performing their job. And we could really use some clarification in the law that firms up our rights to the records of government vendors who really are doing stuff that government did itself until very recently.
Going back to the Pitt-Penn State exemptions, should that loophole be closed, in your opinion?
In significant measure, I think it should. If the hundreds of millions of dollars that the public pays into those universities is being used to fund a given contract, a given service, is going to a given vendor, why shouldn't the public know how that money is being spent? I think the universities are going to argue that they put all their money into a pot, and how can they keep track of what's being paid for with public versus private funds? But I don't think that's too big a burden. And to our governmental listeners out there who may be thinking, wow, Rich would make our lives so much tougher if he was rewriting this law, I want to say that these exceptions often force us to be excessively broad in our requests. If I really do want something that's related to a deliberation that occurred in a local government, I often have to hide that with a much broader than necessary request, because if they see what I want and they see that they can exempt it with one of the exceptions, they'll jump right on that. So I think you might get more focused requests with a more reasonable list of exceptions.
And there's a tug of war going on regarding that. Some people are pushing to add to the list of exemptions. We've talked to Jay Costa, who is among those who's trying to eliminate some of that. How concerned are you as these discussions go forward?
Well, given that print media at least doesn't have high-powered lobbyists like some of the entities that would like to cloak their activities may, I am always concerned. We're going to keep on it. We have the Pennsylvania Newspaper Publishers Association that keeps watch over what's going on there. We'll advocate in our editorial pages, I'm sure. We'll write stories about what's going on in this area. But I think I'm less worried about I'm less worried about people making this law worse than about the gradual shift in focus that we've seen towards these 30 exceptions versus the presumption of openness.
Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reporter Rich Lord on Pennsylvania's now five-year-old open records law. Rich Lord, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure, Paul. Thank you so much.
Coming up, we'll mark the anniversary of the King Charles land grant to William Penn. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.